Yes, my dog Scout is dying to go out and like play because the weather's good and it's not a humid 1,000 degrees. But also, I've got to give you an update on the podcast in my garden since we've gotten into some of that. So this is going to be kind of a garden episode. There are thousands of gardening episodes on YouTube out there for the world. I'm not going to encroach on that space, but I did want to talk about the fact that I have begun to prepare to build my own square foot garden from the Nell Bartholomew method for urban gardening. His basic premise is the maximum amount of produce you can make in the smallest amount of space humanly possible with the least amount of work. And so you're not tilling the soil, you're not, spending backbreaking labor on how to farm the traditional way. It's kind of a what I believe the future of gardening is. The amount of water waste is dramatically reduced because we're using a drip system. So that's kind of the setup that we're doing. A lot of this came into my disappointment about the quality of food I had access to in my local grocery stores that I was willing to pay for. I think that's the biggest challenge. And to tell you a little bit about my personality, I would without a doubt spend a blue fortune to pay to build something once that I will use for many, many years to come, versus paying a higher price to never do the work myself, right? So I'm all about investments and all about how to reduce my kind of footprint on the environment if I can. Not to be like super, there are people who are way more dedicated to it than I am. But I'm at the start of my journey about being more sustainable, and this is one of the ways to do that. Every time I would go to the grocery store and buy a piece of produce, whether or not it was a pack of celery or whether or not it was a package of lettuce, the quality caliber of lettuce was just not on the level that I needed that I wanted it to be. We would go celebrate and have amazing events at these restaurants where you've got wild mushroom risotto that somebody foraged that morning, right? And these restaurateurs and chefs who have these organic farms that they've got these relationships with. So the caliber of product coming out of these restaurants, I can't even get access to, right? It doesn't happen for me because of the way the food system works, right? And so knowing that, I'm like, well, I'd like to have a little bit more control over that. More importantly, I would like to pick my produce that I'm going to eat at the appropriate time that it is meant to be harvested and not beforehand and falsely ripened, right? Or sped up. I would like to eat the food when it's ready to be eaten, not when it needed to be shipped to me. So there's that component of it. I would like a more quality product, more stable product, and then also getting able to, pick what I want to grow. And whenever I go to the grocery store, I'm at the whim of whatever they're selling that day. And sometimes there are products that I would like to have that I don't have regular access to. So taking more control over what I'm growing, what I'm eating based on how I'm growing it is really appealing to me. The other thing to mention is it's not just spreading some seeds in the ground and then watering it and waiting to see what pops up. There's literally a maintenance schedule that's got to happen for fertilization and times to plant. Different plants require different times of planting based on which zone you're in. So it gets really super technical, but the reality is that it's not in any way overwhelming. It starts off overwhelming as every new project does, especially if you don't have any education in it. And I think that's where I'd like to talk about removing the fear of failure in regards to learning a new hobby, in this case, gardening. You don't have to worry about messing it up or being late or not being ready. These were all mistakes and all concerns that I had when I started this process. We started talking about building this garden when we were in, I want to say January, February, and then we didn't actually physically start building it until March, April. And even now here we are, it's April 21st, and I still don't have all my soil in my beds yet. I still don't have my cattle paddle up yet for my trellis. All of that to say that, I had so much anxiety about missing my growing season that ultimately I'm not behind the curve on anything, right? Like there's no immediate sense of failure because we didn't get the first crop in on what would be the regular schedule. What we are is we are early for the next season, right? We are early on the next planting season and cycle of the process. And so that helps me keep forward focused on what happens next in my future in regards to planting, but also now I have breathing room about learning how to properly care for these plants and seedlings that I'm growing. And so like there's some time built in to learn how to properly prune, whatever the plant is in my case, so tomatoes and peppers and all the things that I'm going to grow in my garden. But all that to say, right, there was the original anxiety about starting to learn how to garden because I didn't know anything about gardening at all ever, and I had never, my grandparents gardened, but like I was not an active participant in the day in and day out of that. My mother would weed gardens, but she wouldn't it was ornamental. We weren't eating out of the garden. And so my education about where food comes from and how to build good soil to take care of these plants, there was quite the learning curve for that. The number one issue that most people make in regards to garden failure or plant failure is over or under watering. And so knowing that that's literally every mistake I've made about how to, over the course of my lifetime about why none of my plants made it previously, it's been quite the learning curve about, oh, like that's what went wrong there. And oh, that's why that didn't work. And oh yeah, that's, oh yeah, like it stayed in the pot too long. Like these are things that you only learn through experience, right? These are the things that you only learn if you're continuing to practice the habit of learning how to garden, in this case for this hobby. And that translates over into other aspects of your life, right? That I think people take for granted because, if you're a millennial and you grew up in the US, you grew up with this, teaching to the test mentality where the only thing that mattered was passing the test, right? Like getting to the next like thing. And so the learning how to build a system that works from start to finish and is constantly needing to be adjusted, that skill set's something that a lot of people aren't born with, that you have to develop and you have to cultivate. To use a gardening term for it, but from a business perspective, it's these are skills that you're taught if you go to any type of planning, project management workshops, right? Like these are skill sets. Actually, honestly, non-business related, a lot of these skill sets are skill sets that you learn in math class. Specifically, if you're dealing with algebra, where you are plugging in math formulas in for other math formulas for letters in the equations where you had compound scenarios that had to be played out to find a certain variable. That kind of thinking, if you were really good at math, that kind of thinking really does translate over into something like gardening because it requires a focus about like here are the rules for this space and here's what you can influence and here's what you can't influence and here's what you like it's that kind of thing. So if you want a complex project that you had no idea was as massively involved as it is, pick up gardening. Now, of course, like if you don't have an interest in growing your own food and you don't have an interest in kind of taking that on, that may not be the hobby for you. But it really does appeal to me. So you'll hear me talking about it and kind of waxing on about it just because it's not something that I ever gravitated towards when I was a kid. I didn't actually discover that I even liked any part of this until literally this last year. And it's purely from a I would like to have a better food product to eat situation. I would like to, I would like to have a more sustainable food structure. And also because of my style of eating, the way that I've changed my eating over the last year, I've really incorporated a whole lot of vegetables in my life, fruits and vegetables in my life, and I've given up flour and sugar. And so in that space, this is just a more sustainable way to get more of my fruits and vegetables. Because when you're eating, 20 ounces of vegetables every single day, it's a lot. And that's just the vegetables. That doesn't even include the fruit that I'm doing. So it can get overwhelming. And so you just gotta plan for that and kind of make sure. But the fear, the things that you can have to be fearful over about gardening, right? Like the expense of the experience, how much it costs to buy soil. If you're new to gardening, this would be for this hobby specifically. There's a company out there called Chip Drop. They offer free arborist chips that have been mulched up from trees that have been taken down locally in your community. I say locally in your community, I assume it's locally. But I just found out about them. They're a free resource for truckloads of mulch. The drawback to them is you can't decide or control how much mulch you get. So if they give you a truck bed that has 6 tons of mulch, you get 6 tons of mulch that day. And there's no rhyme or reason to about that. But if you need a whole bunch of free mulch in your life, that's an resource that's available to you. The other thing is your local municipality will have a program of some magnitude for urban gardeners, especially if you don't live in a rural area. And you can get in touch with them to see if maybe they'll get you set up with a free compost bin or a free composting workshop or even supply you with free compost. A lot more municipalities for their communities are getting involved in it that way to be more sustainable. Some states have tax rebates for having a local farm or a market farm on your property. You can look into that if you look into that as a money-making revenue stream. All that to say, like when there's a will, there's a way, right? If you have to start with, cheap topsoil that you amend with your local compost, then that's where you start, right? Like, if you have the resources to do more, right? Have it be as focused and dedicated as you'd like. There are benefits to building your own soil from scratch versus, starting with somebody else's pre-made mix. But the long and short of it is plants don't provide you nutrients. Plants just pass along nutrients that are coming from the soil. And so if you understand that and you understand how they uptake resources, then we can build a environment that's more suitable for your plants to produce that harvest for you. But this just all of this is kind of universal business practices, right? If you build the correct system, right, for business, this translates over, this is a long range vision, right? This is something that you can do forever, right? This is sustainable. Everybody's doing their pre-designed tasks. And there's less strife about workload and who's responsible for what and what needs to happen. Like it just runs more smoothly. If you are also like-minded, like entrepreneurial spirit like me, you're always talking about multiple streams of income and revenue. In this way, if you're picking up a hobby, a new hobby, many people start a hobby with the aspiration that it's going to be a money-making endeavor. The reality is that you have to understand what your original hobby was to begin with in the first place. What was the purpose of the hobby? The purpose of the hobby was to do something that you enjoyed, right? That filled your spirit. So if we honor that, right? Like you can have found a job that does the same thing and it's not a hobby, right? Like there's that component of it. So there's my random like food for thought on that. But people who are going into a hobby to make money, that's not a hobby, that's a job, right? Like so don't get confused or as I guess the kids call it now, don't get twisted about what you're actually doing, right? Don't lose focus about what you're actually doing. If your hobby was meant to be an enjoyable thing that filled your spirit, let it be that. If it also happens to pay your bills, well, that's cool, but right, like, but let's be mindful about what the original intent is. We can always make more money. We cannot always get more time. And I think that's the key factor about people who go into business and are entrepreneurial understand is the fact that like we can always make more money. We can always There's always a way to make more money. We just can't get more time. So the only way that we get more time is if we, pay other people to do the tasks we don't want to do, or we, figure out a way to outsource that to somebody else, because it's just a finite quantity of material. Me see. No. Okay, so we talked about the garden. We talked about if you start a hobby, it basically boils down to it starts. This is how you start a hobby. I know my buddy Kevin over at Epic Gardening, he doesn't know me, but I watch all of his videos. He's so put together about his YouTube episodes that I really need to come up with some type of system for how I was going to make a podcast episode work. But Right now, it's all about me producing raw content on the regular to get in the habit and the routine of getting this information out there. And as I become more proficient at that, I will build in more structure and have it be something that's more consistent, so you know what to expect from this channel. Because it has been missing a little bit of structure as we've done this kind of pivot along the way. So, yeah, so there's that for this episode. We'll wrap that up with a little bit of information about starting a hobby and what's important about the hobby, and also like some things to be mindful of if you are planning to start a garden. And there's lots of ways to start a garden. It can be ornamental. You don't have to eat from it if you choose to. You can live in an apartment and be in shade and still have tons of humidity and still have plants that work for you. There are the word is cultivars of different plants that do well in different climates. It's important to understand what your growing zone is, and understand where your sun placement on your property is, because that's ultimately the two things that are going to set you up for success. Is knowing how soon and how late you can plant, and what to expect in regards to temperatures, but also in regards to sunlight, because you need to know how much sunlight your plants like or don't like, so you can set up your garden based on working with what you got. Because if you plant corn in a shady spot of your garden, it's not going to do well. If you plant watermelon in a shady spot of your garden, it's not going to produce the fruits, because that stuff wants a huge amount of sunlight and nutrients. So, all things that you don't know until you get into it and kind of go down that road. But yeah, that's where I'll leave it. Hey guys, it's Stella Baker with the F Word Podcast, and the episode we're going to do for you today is talking about systems in regards to hobbies and businesses and kind of how those overlap. We've been talking a lot about me starting the food garden in my backyard, and then also picking up sewing as a hobby because of the pandemic, and then kind of going from there. There was this time where I was producing all of these clothing, this clothing that I wanted to wear because I liked the way it fit, and I liked it was more, I was more comfortable wearing it. Of course, I picked the fabric and then pieced the fabric together, cut out the fabric, right, like sewed it together, right. So there's a lot of customization in regards to that. But the hard part is that, all the people, all my friends and family who saw this were just kind of blown away with the fact that I was able to just jump right into sewing and kind of diving into producing my own clothing. And there were so many people who had this mindset of, oh, I could never do that. And the reality is that the only thing stopping you from doing exactly what I just did was the fact that I believed I could, and you believed you couldn't, right? Like that's really what it boiled down to. The important thing to mention for me about this hobby of sewing that I have is I don't need it to be perfect, right? The only function I have about sewing is the fact that it provides me a physical product that's in some form of completion at the end of my day, right? Like there's some progress. I see physical progress from my efforts and my work. I need that in my life right now, in part because my work as a business coach doesn't always allow me to see the products of my work. Like I don't always get to see results from my influence. And sewing provides me a very real, tangible way to see my progress in that area. So that's honestly one of the reasons why I do it. The other reason why I do it is because I have a weird body shape. I'm an in-between size in many things. And I want clothes to fit me better. And I hate going shopping because I hate feeling bad about myself about not fitting into these standardized sizes that have been mass produced, right? Like this is what this is. And so I've kind of gone down that road in regards to why that's my hobby of choice. I prefer how my clothes fit me better. I feel more comfortable in them. And while they may not be, perfect, because it's not really a style that I liked, or it's not really the fabrics that I would have chosen if I could do it over again, I don't need it to be perfect. So I'm just happy that I'm learning, right? Like I'm happy that I'm getting mileage under my belt about how to do it. And I think that's probably the biggest key point takeaway for me about this, taking the fear out of failure. Right. My standards for what I wanted from the experience were pretty low. Like I just wanted to not stab myself in the finger with my sewing machine, right? Like I didn't want to have a needle go through my finger. So I didn't want to cut myself on scissors. I didn't want to, poke myself with a needle, right? Like I was like, oh, I'd like no self-harm. Excellent. Let's go down this road. But more importantly, right, like did I need it to be perfect? Did I need it to be even? Did I need, did I need all these, did I need it to look like I just spent $80 for on it at the grocery, like at the clothing store? None of that's important to me, right? Like none of that matters to me. Does it dig into my sides? Do I feel like a cow in it, right? Like these are other things that I pay attention to. So, because my standards for that are so low, I'm not inhibited by my ability to produce clothing, right? Like for myself. And so more important, so of course, all these people who, are paralyzed with fear, like they're like, oh, I can never do that. Oh, I never, you are so talented. Well, it's not talent, folks. I'm following instructions, right? Like YouTube has made this very easy for me to learn how to pick this hobby up. There are a billion YouTube videos out there about sewing and about how to finish seams and every aspect of clothes construction that you could possibly make. There are classes, there are workshops, there are sew-alongs. I mean, like there's just for people who are looking for an education about how to learn this skill set, there's no shortage of information out there about how to do that. And so basically I'm like, you can do the same things. Like I started with a sewing machine, right? Like I didn't have a bunch of fancy equipment or a dedicated sewing room or anything like that. I started on a card table, a folding card table with a folding card table chair, right? Like that's where I started. And obviously I think that's the reality is when you're starting out small on whatever it is, if you live in an apartment and you're limited on space, right? Maybe that's all you've got is a card table or a cart or, your kitchen table or your dining room table or whatever. You just got to start humbly with where you are, with what you have, right? And then kind of grow into it. What if you don't like it, right? Like then you didn't spend a ton of money investing in a hobby you don't like, right? Like so then you can kind of like pivot. Like, and I think that's the other part about the fear of starting projects, starting something new is aside from the expense of getting into the hobby, what if I don't like it, right? Then I've wasted all of this effort and time and energy. Well, I just don't feel the same way about that. I feel like no experience is wasted, and the amount of effort that you spent to learn what you did learn about that hobby, even if to learn that you didn't like it, is not wasted because then you know, oh, I don't like this type of project. I don't like this type of task. Learning who you are and what you like is probably the most valuable thing you can do in your life. Because it speeds up everything that you do, right? It speeds up all of the wrong turns and the spot you stay in because you don't know you can leave it, right? That's kind of what that is. So I encourage you to be playful and curious about your personality and what your desires are and what you want from your future and kind of go out and find out what those are, right? Without the tone of judgment or shame that you may have been conditioned or programmed to have, right? There are no rules about how you navigate this world aside from the laws that govern every state and country that you live in. Right, like every city that you live in, but aside from that, right, like you can make your life easier by doing certain things. One of the ways that you can make your life easier, honestly, is it sounds kind of productive and counterproductive, is to constantly challenge yourself to do something new every day. And for people who do not like a bunch of change and who do not like stepping outside their comfort zone on the regular, this will be a shockingly offensive task, but ultimately that's how you inoculate yourself to being resistant about change, right? Like that's how you build up your resistance and your resiliency to change and your frustration tolerance about change. So that's just one way to do it is to decide you're going to try something new every day. If that's too big of a step for you and that's just too much, maybe commit to doing learning one new thing a quarter or one new thing a week or whatever frequency or time frame works good for you. But I think the key is to always be moving forward, right? To always be learning and growing and kind of stretching the horizons of your own experience because our time here is so precious and limited. That's my personal philosophy on the subject. Don't feel like you have to share that, but that's what I like. I've just noticed that my purple sweet potato plant is getting ready to make flowers, and that's super exciting because that means that I'll get my sweet potatoes. That's a new that I'm growing. So back to gardening and kind of getting a side note of that. So we started planning out a 4x4 square for my urban garden that I'm going to build in the backyard. And then, of course, through research, found out that that was not sustainable for a full-grown adult based on square footage. If you're planning to build a garden that you're going to eat from, there's a certain standard size that you need to have per person for product yield for growth. And so when you're talking about how many square feet per person that you need, if you're following Mel Bartholomew's method, the square foot gardening method, he talks about the fact that you need to have a minimum. I want to say it's 30 square feet per person, 32 square feet per person. So it's basically, for me, I was going to need 2 4x4 boxes, and then because of that, because I was also going to be growing for my husband, who has not committed to this way of life yet, we built him two. So we ended up building 5 4x4 boxes in a U shape. So it's there's 3 in the back and then 2 in the front, and there's a square in the middle that I stand in that I'll be doing my work around. And we are doing vertical gardening with this method. So we bought originally I bought field panel or field fence, thinking that that would be sturdy enough to trellis my watermelons and cantaloupes and squashes up. But turns out I was wrong. I got the wrong stuff. So now we've got field fence that I don't know what to do with yet. I'll figure out something to do with that. But we got one of the hog panels installed. We ended up doing 2 hog panels and a cattle panel. They're just different shapes. They are structurally different. And so the cattle panel is the strongest of it, and that's going to be what's going to hold all my heavy fruits and vegetables at full growth. But talking about being real and talking about like getting real about the process of starting this hobby, I have planted seeds twice now that never made it to the bed, right? Like, because I was so afraid and anxious of missing my growing season, and I wanted to make sure that I had seeds ready to get started whenever I did have soil, that I started growing seeds in these seed starter kits or in these seed starter setups. But the fact is that I don't have my soil's not ready, because we've been on the lookout for compost forever because everybody and their dog started gardening in 2020. And so the local landscapers are just overrun with people asking for compost. And so that's part of the reason why we're starting to do our own composting here, as a part to reduce our footprint on the landfills. We're also looking to be able to offset some of the costs of needing to buy compost in the future. So if we b make enough compost here with our food scraps and our greens and browns, it might be enough to get around having to buy compost in bulk. But yeah, and then just the ways in which we go about doing that. So so there's been quite the learning curve for me. I had no idea that you had to make soil, that you couldn't just use the soil that you live in, your native soil. So FYI, if you're looking to get into gardening, you want to get a it's a report from your local extension office from the universe, the excuse me, the U.S. Department of Agriculture. You are allowed to have a actual report done for your soil, to send it off to find out what you would need to do to amend your soil. That means adding nutrients and natural materials to the soil to make it viable for planting. So you can turn it into an agricultural space. So that is something that is legally allowed to every American citizen in the US. If you get to, register for it, and your county extension office will give you the information for that. And I'll try to post a blog video about that. Not to say that like I said, this isn't a gardening channel necessarily. It's just kind of if you're looking to get started, here's the direction and how I did it and what we needed to do. I did not have a soil test done of my property because we chose to build raised garden beds. So that's what we did. We built raised garden beds out of pressure treated lumber. And for those of you who are following, this is pressure treated lumber that was produced after 2003. So it is from the FDA food safe for gardening purposes, for food garden purposes. If you have older lumber that's older than pressure treated lumber that was previous to 2003, it could have been treated with arsenic, so you don't want to use that lumber in your raised garden beds. And so, like, learning about the fact that there's leaching and chemical leaching, and what does that look like, and you know, Roundup's terrible for your yards, don't use it. You know, these kind of things. When you look at like how to get into this arena, there's a lot to learn. And so, of course, when there's a lot to learn, there's a lot of what you would feel to be mistakes to make, right? But they're not mistakes if you don't know, right? Like, they're just, you don't know, right? Like, that's not what that is. It's a, well, now it's a learning opportunity, right? So if you're me and you don't have soil and you're planting seedlings and seed starters that are only designed to be there for, you know, a short amount of time, anywhere from, you know, 2 weeks to, you know, 6 weeks. I mean, they're not designed to be in living in there for months, and that's what happens. That's why your seeds aren't going to work, right? Making sure that your roots aren't getting root bound, right? Like, these, learning the process of how to do this hobby, right? Like, learn gives you some information about planning and systems and structure, and you know, why it's important to get ahead of the game and do planning on the business as well as in the business, if we're going to use that as a business analogy. But you know, from my coaching practice and being mentored by a business coach, you know, we talked about the fact how important it was to work, spend as much time working on the business as you do working in the business. And the distinction for that being, you know, if you're in the business, you're transactioning daily business. So you're serving your clients, you're sending out whatever your marketing materials are, you're taking in your orders, you're processing your billing, whatever that system looks like. That's the day in and day out if you're doing payroll. But the on the business stuff is the vision stuff. It's the planning stuff. It's the important stuff that's not urgent, right? It's the stuff that helps you plan for what's the business going to look like next year, or what's the business going to look like in 6 months, what's the business going to need in 10 years, like these kind of things that you can are planning for. So from a gardening perspective, this would be the pre-season planning that you do for, you know, what vegetables you're going to grow, or, you know, what product, if it's for business, what product offerings you're going to offer. And then kind of building the structure for that. One of my favorite photographers that I know, she's pivoted in her business and originally started with just doing 5 bookings a year for her organization. And as she has grown, she's built in an online community, an online branding like group, and on, you know, the online school stuff, the education packages, the, you know, these ongoing service for monthly service package for social media. I mean, like, she's really just grown it. And so, but it all starts with, you got to start somewhere. You got to start with one thing, right? And there's a book out there. It's called The One Thing, right? Focus on the one thing. And honestly, if we're being entirely real about it, the most important thing you could ever do to yourself to move yourself forward is to get square about what the one thing is you want to do in your heart and soul and bones, like what you feel called or inspired to do with your life, whatever that happens to be. Now, in my case, I'll be entirely frank about this because I think this is something that we don't talk about a lot. You know, for a lot of people who know me as a business coach and have known me about starting my own business and like all that stuff that happened through the last several years, they don't know me as Stella the gardener or Stella the sewer, you know, Stella the housewife. I mean, I'm not a house, like I don't currently see myself as a housewife, but like, I'm currently unemployed. So like, in this space, you know, that's quite a different expectation for people who have known me as being the mover and shaker in the business community and having relationships across a huge network of things. And so, like, learning that my spirit did not feel called to be a mover and shaker in this community. I did not feel, you know, every single time I thought about building in this market for my coaching practice, literally a part of my spirit died. And I couldn't, you know, I don't, I'm still unpacking what that is for me and what that looks like, but I really was struggling to find out what that, what, why was I being called to coach? What was I getting out of coaching for me? And then facing the realization that I wanted to always be coaching from a neutral place, and I did not feel at the time in my life that I needed to be building a business. I didn't feel that I could do that from a calm and neutral place, right? Because I was still triggered from the pandemic. I was still triggered from, you know, moving to another cold market as a military spouse and starting over from scratch, and like just all of the heartburn and heartache, I guess, from the last several years of building in a cold market, right? I need a break from that for the moment for myself. And so the pivot, the natural progression to this is we have changed the podcast in such a way that we're making room for that. We're making space for that, and honoring what my own spirit or like needs are, right? Because I'm not going to build a business that makes me busy. I'm not, busyness is not a desired skill set for myself, right? Like it's not something that is massively important to me. I care about being productive. I care about you know, results, but I don't necessarily care about spending every waking moment of my life down to the deadline to get everything done. That's just not how I view my existence. You know, with all the planning that it comes from planting a garden and all of the expectations about like what the most important thing is to know going forward about any decision that you make is this something I really want to do? Or is this something I feel like I have to do? Is this something that you know, it, whether or not it's school, whether or not it's work, whether or not it's, you know, whatever that they get marriage. I mean, let's be perfectly real. If people were entirely honest about why they got married in the first place, the first time, because I'm divorced, so I get to say the first time, it might not be love, like for the reason that they got married, right? Like it just might not be. It may very well be, right? But, you know, what if it's, you know, not, right? Like let's be honest with ourselves, if with nobody else, about what that is. My dog Scout is just asking so politely that I play with him and that I run him for 10 miles. I have a gold, two golden retrievers, Harley and Scout. If you paid attention to any other episodes, you'll know that as puppies, they were involved in the other episodes. But Scout is going to be 3 here in June, and he has been cooped up in the house because of the Florida rains that have been the last several days. The ground's been too muddy and wet to do anything, so he's climbing the wall. It's like he's like, you've got to run me out of the dog park, Mom. And I have objections about dog parks, so we'll talk about that in another video. But I'll leave that here because Scout wants to play. So I'm off. I'll talk to you guys soon. All right, so oh, I found myself wanting to say in the name of Brené Brown. She's turned into my spirit animal as I've gotten older. And I just am so enamored with her and her fierce vulnerability. And just the liberation she gives to people to be whole, authentic, real, messy, you know, individuals. And so I think about her whenever I'm getting ready to do something that's outside my comfort zone. I'm sure a lot of people do, but you know, in starting this podcast up and talking about taking the fear out of failure, you know, talking about the fact that I'm not going to edit the podcast, and that it's going to be raw footage, and what about all the ums and the ahs and the breathing and the, it, unfortunately, because I'm a loud person, me being loud, right? Like me being offensively loud, as I've been told by many throughout my lifetime, but also I mumble, so you know there's just all these things to think about. But the reality is that that's all in my bowl, and those are my emotions about of my own inadequacy, and I'm not too big to say that out loud. So what we're talking about today. You know, I find myself, I've been an insomniac for a really long time. I spend a lot of my time worrying about things that will never matter, as I'm sure many of us do. But mine specifically, often, as I'm sure it is with a lot of people, it's that, you know, your people, the people you can't influence, right, that stick with you forever. And mine more often than not, it's usually my dad. Like my dad's the one that I'm the one grinding about at night. And I'm not really sure how that happened, right? And you know, also my mom. So like there's, and then I worry about my twin, right? Like there's just a lot out there like to think about. And you know, part of it's just shared trauma together, as well as, you know, just general, you know, this is who I grew up with and these are my people, right? So doing some laundry. I've got to earn that laundry dishes. I have to make myself some lunch. So you're gonna hear that as I'm moving around my kitchen. But you know, with 2021, like my days look drastically different than they used to. I mean, I'm out here digging a trench for a drip hose for my food garden. I never thought I would have said that. And if you talked to me it literally in December of this last year, I don't think I would have ever said that. So that's been quite the shock. Trying to figure out what I was doing there. You know, there's some other things that come along with. I got sidetracked. Let me recenter my thoughts. My days look different. Oh, digging a trench, like mowing the yard, like doing house stuff. Like my days are avoiding people spamming me about jobs that don't exist, or about jobs in another country where you know, I don't need a visa. Or all the retail jobs on the planet that I'm overqualified for. So not again, I can't stress this enough. I'm not really, I wish that I were getting other jobs, right? Like in a nutshell, I wish it's really hard for me to not feel bitter and resentful about the fact that I worked my tail off through college in a double major, that it took me 6 years to get it done. And that I was in a terrible marriage at the time, right? Like, not to say that I paid my dues, but like, I mean, I went through a lot to get here, right? To be able to be successful in my career and to develop skill sets that were going to take me through in my life. And so, like, I just, as a millennial, I'm a little burned out on the fact that it's 2021, and we're not there yet, right? Like, this is. Which is where for me, I have to get up and go do something else. You know, I have to go dig the trench in the yard because if I sit here and think about it, I'll just be upset about it, right? Which comes back again full circle to Brené Brown and her talking about the fact that, you know, to people who don't know me or my story or don't care to know me or my story, you know, it's so easy to be critical when you're not in the arena, when you're not doing the activity, right? It's so critical to think that you understand what's happening in that situation and that you understand the, you know, the factors at play in that environment. And that's not always the case. So I try to honor that myself. I'm trying to come at it from a place of curiosity and a place of generosity. I think that's also missing in the world. But you know, it's not easy. It's certainly not without effort. You know, in saying that. So, you know, it's taken me a really long time to kind of work up to this subject because it's so difficult for so many people. Who gives you heartburn, right? Is it your boss giving you heartburn? Is it a coworker giving it a heartburn? Gotta get a drink of thirsty. It looks like I gotta go water my plants. Looking thirsty too. So you might listen to me do that while I'm doing that, but we'll see how much noise there is while I'm talking about all these things. Actually, let me go water them and I'll come back to this.